What's the deal, baby? It's your man Grimey, and I'm back for 2008. I just gotta let y'all know about something. I keep seeing this iRadio and iMix shows and mixtapes. Yo, let me kill that. There's only one show that has to do with mixtapes, and it's the iTunes Street Official Show. There's only one podcast that's the Street Official Podcast with DJ Winter. He do it all. There's only one show. All the rest are fugazi, baby. I'm letting y'all know. Real, recognize real, and motherfuckers, we don't know you. Winter, kill that shit. Crazy.
Street Official Black Music Month.
Street Official Real Talk.
Real Talk.
Real Talk.
Real Talk.
Real Talk.
It's going down, fades to Black Street. The homies got at me, collab creations. Bump like agony, no doubt. I put it down, never slouch. As long as my credit can vouch, a dog couldn't catch me. Say, tell me who could stop with Dre making moves, attracting honeys like a magnet. Giving them orgasms with my mellow accent. Still moving this flavor with the homies Black Street and Teddy, the original Rough Shakers.
Shutting it down, good lord. Baby got them open all over town. Strictly bitch, you don't play around. Cover much grounds, got game by the town. Getting paid is a forte. Each and every day, true play away. I can't get her out of my mind.
Wow.
I think about the girl all the time.
Wow, wow.
Real talk.
Real talk.
Real talk.
All right, y'all, so we about to get down. We're doing Black Music Month. It's the iTunes Street Official Real Talk Podcast. And I got to tell you, man, I'm going to say one of my favorite individuals in the music business and a personal friend of mine. And there's too many ways to really describe him. I'm going to let him go ahead and introduce himself, and then we're going to get into some things here.
Good evening. I'm Teddy Riley.
And he's being humble, sounds like.
Oh, man. All right. What's up, people? My name is Teddy Riley. I'm in the house. Thank you very much.
Street Official Real Talk.
You've got your problems, baby, and I've got mine. Let's just spend it all by putting it together.
Now, just real quick, and I told you this once before, Teddy, you know, I looked you up on Yahoo one day, man. I was trying to come up with a description, and it said that you are the most pivotal individual producer of dance music of the 20th century. I don't know if you ever read that before.
I really don't go online to read anything about myself. I like to read about everybody else. So, I mean, I don't. I don't even go on and, you know, unless I wanted to see, like, what I did last. And like this trip to Korea that I did, I wanted to see that because I did a press conference out there for a new movie that we're working on called Hype Nation. And a lot of people, you know, they've been calling me, yo, go check out the site, go check out what you're doing. And it's like, you know, this is my, well, I really don't do that. But I did it that time because I wanted to see, you know, what the outcome was. And it was a great outcome. We're going to be doing a lot of things over there in Korea.
And just real quick, you know, we roll into June, getting ready to start up on the Black Music Month, which is, you know, we actually celebrate, you know, our black music as well as the heritage and the culture that brings us to where we are now. And, you know, over the years, I mean, KRS-One said this to me one day, man, we talk about Black History Month. And he was saying, you know, it feels like corporate America really kind of makes things generic. You know, Black History Month, black music comes around. All of a sudden you see McDonald's ads pop up and it's like, we're celebrating Black Music Month. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this year I wanted to do something a little bit different where I would actually get folks to actually talk about the regions where they come from and actually what that region has done to contribute to black music. And I'm trying to kind of connect the dots between the East and the South and the Midwest and West Coast. And I'm not expecting you to do all that, but I want to talk to you specifically about the East Coast. And we're going to definitely get into what you contributed yourself into what we now have as modern music. But I'd like to get your idea what Black Music Month means to you.
Well, what it means to me is really something that pay homage to our original music heroes and our black people, you know, who made music, who made history. And if I can say in so many words, it just represents greatness. And I'm happy to be speaking about greatness and a lot of people that I look up to who are great to me and who were great to me and still.
And when you think back about, you know, before you became Teddy Riley, the super producer, you know, go back to the days of, you know, being outside the Apollo and so on. I mean, who were you looking to as influences to doing what it is that you were doing at the time, being, say, the young Teddy Riley who's just playing music out of passion, let's just say?
Well, I looked up to a guy who never got known as a producer, but he did a lot of records out there, but he wasn't one to really get himself known. He's actually the cousin of Kool & the Gang, Robert Bell and those guys. His name is Royal Bayan. He's the guy who taught me everything that I know. I mean, of course, I've taken it to the next level, but the basics of how to produce and how to write songs and really, he took me to every session there was. Kashif, he took me to the Kool & the Gang sessions. I was there when they did Celebration and when they did Ladies Night. I was there for an 8-hour drum session where the kick drum was being played for 2 hours. You know, they was just tuning the kick drum. It's like, damn, when they gonna be finished with this? But I was the water boy. I was the one to go get the water, the tea. And that's what I did before I got into the industry. I was at a Freddie Jackson session. I was at In Deep. Last night, a DJ saved my life when they did that record. So I got to see how to make a record and how to really get into the music industry. But way, way before that, I used to go to the Apollo at the age of 5, at the age of 4, all the way up till I got older and got the chance and the pleasure to play there. But I used to go there when my school was right across the street from the Apollo. The backyard of our school is the backstage of the Apollo. So we used to see all of the stars when they came out, when they went in for a sound check. We used to see all of that at 1 o'clock on our lunch break, 12 o'clock on our lunch break. And I would see Marvin Gaye, but I didn't know who he was. And I would see James Brown. I didn't know who he was. All I knew was the records. I couldn't place the face with the record. But when they did the Motown 25th anniversary, I was backstage with the Temptations and talking to Tito and Jackie Jackson from the Jacksons and talking to Smokey Robinson. And I got the pleasure later on in years to actually tell them I was the one backstage, you know, this little kid that was actually bugging y'all, you know, about what do you do and, you know, how you do this and what time y'all going on and can I go to the show? And I happened to get into the show and I asked my mom, because I was young, I was really young, I think I was about 10 years old, and I asked my mom, can I go to the show? But she said she didn't have anybody to watch me to go to the show. She said, if you can find somebody to watch you, to take you to the show, you can go. Because I had 2 tickets. I happened to get 2 tickets to go to the show. So seeing that, and then a little before that, being picked up on the stage at a Gladys Knight show by Gladys Knight. She picked me up on the stage when she was singing Neither One of Us. And all I knew from then is I wanted to be in show business. That's what I want to do. I want to be on a stage. And then just being around all of that has gave me my answer to my life, you know, my whole life and what I wanted to be. And this is what I turned out to be, what I said at the age of 5.
I got to tell you, that's the first time I heard that.
Yeah.
You know, as long as we've been knowing each other.
Every chance that I, you know, like people would ask me and then I would tell them. I don't just come out and say what made me want to be in the music industry. You know, I kind of talk about it sometimes because sometimes it's bad memories because you, not only when you go through that, you also go through the domestic things that happen in your home. So just the broken family, dealing with that and then dealing with the block. Either you down or you not. So I had to play 4 or 5 different hats. I had to play the hustler, the little street hustler, the little church boy that's playing piano in church. And then I played the paper boy on Sunday. I used to sell papers Sundays. You know, they used to do the Sunday papers to all the elders. So I was the one of the kids that sold the papers in the projects. And then I was a schoolboy. You know, I went to school. And I continued doing that until I really figured out what I wanted to do, and I went to pursue it at an early age. I used to play in nightclubs at the age of 13. I used to play piano for a band called Total Climax, and we played in the Blue Note, the Lickety Split, the Rennie's Lounge, Jock's Place, Tribeca's, all over, like New York and Atlantic City. So my experience came at a very, very early age, and I don't usually talk about it because sometimes it goes back to memories that I don't want to remember.
Well, let me say this, man. You know, in trying to figure out, you know, who I should actually get to do interviews for different regions, you know, I couldn't think of another individual that I thought would be able to represent the East in that way. And don't get me wrong, you represent music in such a bigger way. But, you know, you are an icon and you have, and I've always told you this, man, you got a swagger. And, you know, I'm not talking about the new generation. They can be offended. I don't really give a fuck. But what I'm saying, I'm being real. You know, we were talking about this earlier, man. And there's no offense to anybody, any new stars coming. But I'm saying, you know, the stars of the past, man, had a certain star quality about them.
It's not many stars today. And that's the bad thing about black music. We have changed our ways of being hungry for the music. You know, it becomes a hobby to a lot of people. And it's never been a hobby to us. It's been our life. Like, this is all we do. You know, we don't live nothing. We breathe, eat, and shit this. And that's how I lived all my life. I said and I spoke it into existence that I'm going to be in the music industry. I'm going to be in show business, and I'm going to be a star. And I did it. I went and I did it, and I made it my life. I never had a job other than this.
Real talk. Real talk.
Sniffing cocaine, holding an M16. See, with the pen, I'm extreme. Now, bullet holes left in my peak holes. I'm suited up with street clothes. Hand me a 9 and out, the feet froze. Y'all know my steelo, with or without the airplay. I keep some E and J, sitting bent up in the stairway.
Real talk, real talk, real talk.
And when you think about where you're from, and this is my question for you, what do you think the East Coast has contributed to black music? Successful, whatever, how you feel about it?
I think they contribute. Like I said, Not only, because I don't just represent the East Coast. I represent, I'm a universal person. I've lived everywhere, probably in the United States. I started out in New York, but I ended up in California. You know what I'm saying? And this is where I'm going to live the rest of my life, because this is where it's at. You know what I'm saying? This is, and I understand now where Tupac is coming from. When he came over here, he became a superstar. And that's what Will Smith did, and a lot of the people from the East Coast. But nothing taken away from the East Coast, because the East Coast, they represent greatness. The greatest people come from the East Coast just as well as the West Coast. It's all over. I'm not a territorial person. I can't say East Coast is better than the West Coast. I can't say West Coast is better than East Coast, because I lived both sides. And I just feel like what goes on in the hoods over there goes on in the hoods over here. What goes on in the Beverly Hills over there goes on in Beverly Hills. The good life is over here. The good life is over there. People kind of live it a little differently. And I think most of the people over there, they come to live over here, because here they share the wealth. On the West, on the East Coast, they don't share the wealth. That's one thing that I have to say. It's like they, what's theirs is theirs. And if you don't come into theirs, you ain't gonna have nothing. And that's what has happened. I had my own. I'm the one who started all the different swaggers and guys not being afraid to wear purple or wear any color. You know what I'm saying? And we did it, starting with Guy, starting with what I did with GR Productions. You know, my godfather slash ex-manager, and still in my life today, was the first Suge. All right, so they Suge took classes with him. Well, he's seen it, but he had a better swagger. Suge didn't have that swagger because he didn't have to use the thug life or the thugness. He didn't have no fight in the club. You know what I'm saying? He never had a problem, and nobody never had a problem with him. You know what I'm saying? And when I broke up with him, it was because how he was treating my people. Because I'm his son. I'm the one who was closer to him than his real son. So he brought that and brought us from the East Coast to the West Coast. And he introduced us to the West Coast, me, Aaron, and Damien, and the rest of our crew. We didn't know nothing about California. We knew that California had Hollywood in it, and that was just like the greatest, you know, like we wanted to go to Hollywood. And we got to go, and we got to perform here, and we got to build our records and our lives as being celebrities here. And, you know, one of our greatest people from Harlem got his, he's the first guy to get a star on the boardwalk, Puffy. So it's greatness there, and it's greatness here, and it's all, it always will be.
And I'm going to say this, because I'm going to rephrase that question. I didn't want to interrupt you, because I knew I was about to get a gem from you, but here's kind of what I'm getting at too, you know. And when I say this, this is one of those things where I'm not trying to devalue or pit any regions.
Uh-huh.
But more or less, like when you look back at, say, Harlem Renaissance, mm-hmm. and you think back about, you know, the global economy for black folks,
okay.
and the music that supported it, you know, you've been through, you know, you've seen R&B, jazz, hip hop, you know, all these different things come up through your lifetime. So that's the kind of thing I'm really kind of reaching at.
Okay, so I can speak like on that.
Yeah. This is time to really kind of put it out there, like, you know, all these different things is what brings success of a guy, you know, or success of a Jay-Z or a Puffy, mm-hmm. you know, because Harlem is in you.
Right.
You know what I mean? Brooklyn is in some of these folks, and the same thing Snoop would say, you know, Long Beach is in him. He's not going to stop being that. Too short from Oakland, whatever. But there's something where you come from that gives you the ingredients to be who you are, and that's kind of what I'm looking for.
Well, it's the hood. I'm sorry. It's the hood, and you know, me coming from there and learning everything about it has brought the swagger that I have out into the world and spread it where people became that or became the greatest producers, you know, and I did it after Quincy and people did it after me, you know, and that's greatness. You know, I can only say that rap was created, the biggest rap stars were created in New York, but the biggest rap stars are created here. So, you know, I know it's not about a territorial thing, but I think that where I come from, it represents greatness. I was fortunate to be and blessed to be in the right place, right time, and not the wrong place at the wrong time. And that's where all my best friends who are not here, all of them, like every last best friend that I had back in, they're all dead, except two of my guys, you know, so that's, it's the hood, you know, I went through everything and got my way through that maze, and now I'm to the world has heard me.
And when you think back about, you know, some of the records, and I remember you were saying when you'd come out, you know, you come out for lunch or recess and you're looking across the way at the Apollo and you're seeing all these folks and not necessarily connecting the dots. But when you think back about, you know, remember we used to have the old school record players and, you know, we stack records on that little,
let it play right after the other.
And they just skip down and, you know. So when you think back about that, some of the music that you might have got a chance to listen to, regardless of the region that it came from, how much of that is in you now?
Oh, man. You know, that's what made me come up and create this music that Barry Michael Cooper named, you know, it, the New Jack Swing. I came up with that style of music by listening to Al Green, James Brown, Curtis Mayfield, Marvin Gaye, Smokey Robinson, The Enchantments, The Moments, The Manhattans, The Gap Band, George Clinton, Herbie Hancock, Michael Nevada Warden, Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson, The Jacksons, Rod Stewart, Phil Collins, Men at Work, The Rolling Stones, Kraftwerk, Nina Simone, Sarah Vaughan, Duke Ellington, Kid Creole. All my swagger comes from all of that. And all I wanted to see was a collaboration. And you never would get a collaboration unless you were on the same label. That's so crazy, right? None of those people could put that music together like James Brown and Prince. Like, nobody could really put their music together and make something huge out of it. And that's what I did. I took James Brown music, his swagger and his and all of that stuff, and put it on a Gap Band song. And I just married them. That's all I did. Truthfully, I just took their style of music and put it all together in one bag. I just wanted to shake all their music up and just make my catalog is 600 something records right now. That's all I did, was took everything that I could ever imagine, like the keyboard line, like boom, yeah, James Brown, and just put it all together. And that's what made the New Jack Swing. I just married all of those people that I'll never get to see in all my days, them get together and just do one song until we out of world. And that wasn't what I wanted to hear. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. You know, once you told me, you know, we were working on the bus and you said a lot of beat makers, good beat makers out there, mm-hmm. and not everybody can make a song. You know, I thought about it one day. I was like, man, but think about this. And, you know, few people can make good songs. Mm-hmm. Most people can't make hits. most people damn sure can't repeat a hit over and over and over. Like you said, you're 600 deep right now. What's the magic?
God, I'm telling you. Like, I never thought these records would make it. I never thought any of these records would be hits. I'd say after my sixth hit record, that's when I started believing in what I do. I'm serious. Like, it took my sixth hit record. Now, that's after maybe 4 or 5 albums. I started believing that I can do it. Like, around Michael Jackson.
Wow.
Was when I believe I can make a record just like, dang, this is what it is. This is next. And, like, I was making the Michael Jackson records at Soundtrack Studios, where I had all three rooms booked up, and I was doing three sessions at the same time. I did Jane Child, Don't Wanna Fall in Love, one session, and then I did Why You Wanna Dog Me Out remix for Guy in another session, and then I took Q-Tip's room. He had a room in Soundtracks, and I said, yo, can I borrow your room for a few days, you know? Y'all gonna be on the road. Is it okay if I set my stuff up? Yeah, I had three setups. So, and it's so crazy. I was with a young lady every day. I don't want to say her name, but she gave me inspiration. She's an actress today. But she gave me inspiration to do everything that I've done at that time. I did 20 songs, 20 tracks. No. 20 tracks for Guy. I did 70 tracks for Michael Jackson. Played them all. Then I was in the room doing Jane Chow. I did 18 remixes for Don't Wanna Fall in Love. That was all in 1 week that I said, you know, because when I got on the phone with Michael Jackson, that was inspiration right there. So I went and, you know, made love to this girl in the studio. You know what I'm saying? Made love to this girl in the studio, and that was it. I went in that room. Jane Child came in, and I finished that song. Then went in the studio with Guy, and they all in the room. And my chick is in the booth. We closed the booth out until we had to do vocals. And anytime I needed inspiration, we went in the booth. Or we went in the bathroom. We went anywhere. We just did it anywhere. Elevator, it didn't matter. So that was that building, Soundtracks, that, you know, they gave me the whole floor. So whatever I did was, that was like my house. So I treated it like that. So that gave me the inspiration to do what I did. And that's how I came up with all of it. I came up with Remember the Time. And I just remember that day just coming up with that song. And I played it for her. And she was like, that is a big record, and she just did it to me right there. It was crazy. Like, she loved the song so much, it was just like, I did another song after that, Keep It in the Closet. I kid you not, I was just doing song after song, track after track, and coming up with the hook and the melodies and everything. Michael was so amazed when I came out to see him that I was so far ahead of what he was doing. He had all these songs over here, Heal the World, all of those things. And he said, this is what I'm doing now, but this is not where I want to be. He said, my favorite song is this song. He's just like, we could spend a night tonight. We could spend a night. He said, that's his favorite song. He said, that's my favorite song, and my favorite rapper is Heavy D. I said, wow. I said, all right, we got that. And I'm going to get Heavy D for you. And I got Heavy D on Trippin'. Stop Trippin' with Me. And but he was amazed that I had like 60 or 70 tracks. And I was playing them back to back. And I said, we'll be here for a long time if I played you all these tracks to the end. We sat there all week listening to every track. All day. Like, he's like, just play them all one by one. And he would get up and just dance, like do his thing, like moonwalk all over the place. And when he heard when he heard Remember the Time, he went nuts. He's like, oh my, stop the track. Start it over. We played that track about 25 times before he said, stop. Let's go to the next one. That's how I knew that record was going to be on the album. You know, it's the song Joy that I did with Blackstreet. That was a Michael Jackson record.
Really?
Yes. He gave it to us because he didn't know if that would fit him, if the people would take him singing such a love song like that. But I thought it was the biggest song for him. And it would be crazy for him to do that song now, today, instead of doing that remake album. I just didn't think that was him, and that's not what the people want to hear. People want to hear him do a Joy or do something that he didn't do that he gave to somebody else. Like, there's a song that Babyface did, who's another one of our greatest, that he did for Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson gave it to 3T. He should have did the song for the album or put it on the Invincible. And it's so crazy now that I'm working with Michael's nephew. We're about to work with Michael. And because he's hearing that, we're making some incredible records and we're making some magic. So that's my story to the inspiration of how I come up with records and still coming up with them, coming up with what's next. Mm. And if it doesn't work, we don't do it. Like, I will not put out a record if I'm not ready. This is the creative business. This business has been this way for the longest. I don't just put out records. It's got to be a smash.
Man, say it again, man. Eat, drink, sleep, and shit. Music.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. Now, you know, I've been with you in the studio, man, and just amazed at, you know, the amount of time that you will use just to critique a kick, a snare, a piano, a string, you know. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you, you know, when you see some of your peers, you know, like Puffy, you know, and you see, you know, the Snoops and the Jays, you know, how does that make you feel just watching their talents grow off of kind of what you laid a foundation for? Because as we talked about New Jack Swing, you know, that blend of merging different genres and different sounds is actually what's keeping black music fresh right now, even though it's going back, you know, 20 years maybe.
Well, it makes me feel good because I got, you know, got the chance to work with them all. And that's sort of a way of really giving back. You know, they've given me back what it is that I do. And I thank Jay-Z, Snoop, and Puff for doing what they're doing and what they've done to pave a way for the young cats to do the same thing. All they have to do is just capitalize off the capital. And what's great? You know, I've learned from Michael Jackson to settle for nothing less than great. And that's how I just pass it on. I pass it on to everybody. Settle for nothing less than great. If you don't think it's great, then it's not.
Real talk. Real talk.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Broken glass everywhere, people pissing on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise, got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back, junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge, I'm trying not to lose my head.
Real talk, real talk.
What they do? They snarl in your face
all the time. They wanna take your place. The backstabbers,
backstabbers. They snarl in your face
all the time. They wanna take your place. The backstabbers,
backstabbers.
All you fellas who have some woman and you really care, yeah, yeah. Then it's all in your fellas. You better beware, yeah, yeah.
Real talk.
Man, I'm gonna tell you, you're very, very humble, humble dude. I'm gonna tell you, man, I'm hearing a lot of rumors about a lot of good things going on these days, man. Big things, new changes, and so on. I wanna know if you wanna share some of the things you've been doing with Snoops and some of the new things you might be working on, you know, in some of your music projects and maybe even some of your business projects you might be involved in, if you can share with us.
Well, I'm having fun now. It's like, these are the times where if you can't have fun doing what you're doing, then don't do it at all. So I said, if I came back into the music industry, I want to have some fun, because I've been really like focused on just making records. Now I want to start putting people together, like what Quincy was doing. You know, he was putting people together, musicians, actors, actresses, everybody all in one room and just make magic. And that's what I want to do now, and that's what I'm doing. I got the pleasure to work with Snoop and really to be a part of his family, you know, and that's something that I'm grateful for, because now I can do what I really do and really spread my wings. You know, I went from just producing the records and helping with facilitating, getting the record finished, and being there every step of the way like I did with Michael. And now I'm getting ready to do something that's really, really fun for me, which is music direct his whole tour. And it's gonna be so much fun, because I got all my little dudes with me now. He gave me the door to change the band, so I'm bringing my little short drummer 5'2". This dude is a beast. Like, he came from, I know you know Gerald Haywood, my drummer. He's like Gerald Haywood on steroids. So when he comes, I know Snoop is going to embrace him. I'm just trying to bring everybody so he can just roll and not have to ever worry about his band. Like, want to get on the stage and not worry about, dag, are they going to hold me up? You know what I'm saying? Or are they going to really hold me down? So I'm really having fun doing that. And having fun, I'm going to be on stage again. And I don't have to worry about being on stage with Guy or being on stage with Blackstreet. Now I can really do what I do and play and really critique and build something that he's going to be one of the first rappers with a hot show. Because I have not seen a hot rap show since Run-DMC. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's show is hot on the rap side. I've not ever seen it. But this, I get to do what I did with Blackstreet and what I did for Keith Sweat. I'm also doing video production. We have, like, when he's doing a performance, I have video production where if it's cameo appearance, that cameo person will be on the screen performing with him. It's gonna blow people away. The first time I did it was with Blackstreet and Dr. Dre. Dr. Dre gave me some footage of him performing the rap of No Diggity to the speed that we're doing it. And what I did was I took it, put it on the screen, and we performed it everywhere. People were like bugging out. So I'm about to do the same thing with him. And then we have a weed plant with smoke coming out of it, and then it turns into a strobe light. And then when there's no performances on the screen, you'll see screensavers like weed and different things. When he's singing a song, it'll remind people of, you'll see like his altercation when he had the murder case and all of that stuff. You'll see all of that stuff on the screen. So I'm really happy doing that. You know what I'm saying? This is what I do. This is my technical side. Then I'm doing some stuff with artists. I just got hooked back up with this young lady who's like, I think she's like the most incredible A&R of back then and of this time. So I got hooked up back with her, and she have a bunch of artists that I'm going to introduce to my producers, and I'm going to let them run the record company. I'm going to be Joe Busby. I'm going to be Al Taylor, just help them facilitate being a record company and letting a young company just go. And I'm going to be the one to push the buttons and make sure that they're doing, that they don't have a problem or no threshold in making records and making money and doing what they do. We need our young people to start taking on the thought of being execs, young execs and entrepreneurs and entrepreneurettes. So I want to give that to my producers and the people who I feel that could really put together and really do something. And then I put them with the investors and people, and they make records and they make money and they go off. And that's something that I'm doing, you know, that is making me a hero. My thing is, I want to be on the film side. I want to be scoring movies, and I want to do soundtracks and really build it back to when you had like one artist do a soundtrack like Curtis Mayfield, like Aretha Franklin, you know what I'm saying? They're doing a whole album, you know what I'm saying? That's the soundtrack to this life. So I'm getting back into that with my film company that I'm partners with, and we're going to do films like that. Like we're looking to do the next sequel to New Jack City.
Mm, wow.
And we're buying the rights to it, and we're looking to buy the rights to it and really get it out there. I've been working on this for like 7 years now, and we're close to getting that and really getting that movie started and getting it out there. We have a movie coming. It's like the next You Got Serve. It's a dance movie, and that's what I went to Korea for, to get with the guys out there who is like the best B-boy crew and team. They're coming over to America in June. We're going to kind of Americanize these guys because they're going to be in the movie. We're going to teach them acting and all the things that they need to know to actually start this film. So this film is called Hype Nation. So you'll see that we're starting the film. We start filming the 25th of July. So I'll be back in the States. I'll be back in California for that, for the initial start of it. I'm not shooting anything. I just want to make sure that I'm there at the front the first day, and then I go back on the road. So that's another thing. Then we're doing some stuff on the technical side with a guy who's actually created like a supercomputer. It's called the Gotham, and hopefully you'll know about that. I can't tell you much more than what I'm telling you right now about that, but you'll hear about that soon as well. And then we're doing a bunch of TV shows, one of which my daughter wrote. It's like a Different Strokes, but it's with three young ladies who are my daughters who are adopted by a white family. So that's coming. We have the treatment and the script for all of that stuff. So much stuff. I mean, I just started 5 months ago. 5 months ago, I came back into the business from being away for like 3.5-4 years. And like I said, I'm having fun, and a lot of things are coming our way, and we're just going after it. We're not turning down anything. If it's TV, we're just going to have to get our behinds in there and take acting lessons and act a fool.
Mm-hmm.
But my most greatest moment was what we just did at Hip Hop Honors, which kind of sparked me up to being back in the business. Just like you left it. What brought me back into it was Hip Hop Honors, and just sitting on the stage talking creative while everybody was enjoying the show. I was on the stage talking creative with Snoop and talking about, you know, let's make history. And he's one of the greats, and it's like I said, I want to be with the greatest, you know. And I consider myself one of the greats. This is my first time ever saying that, but because of this, what this represents and this show, I'm just trying to make history.
Man, I'm gonna say this, and you know, earlier I said something about the new generation. I still feel that way, but you know, I'm gonna be real with you. Hey man, I'm but you know what? Let me be real though. You know, a lot of things has happened to really kind of break that bridge that kind of helped us go from, say, from a Duke Ellington into a Miles, into a George Clinton, and you know what I mean? So I'm not blaming the kids for what they don't learn in school, but I'll say this, you know, when I was a kid, you were a kid, we picked up a lot of things from the folks in the neighborhood. So we had garage bands, not talking about software, but we had garage bands where every other door down or apartment building or whatever, you know, you can go get a bass, a guitar, a drum or whatever. You learn how to play and how to have soul. Mm-hmm. Soul is kind of missing now. You know what I mean? Yeah. So when you tell me, you know, you consider yourself one of the greats, I agree with that. I think that, you know, it's a shame that so many things have been, because of the loss of communication, that the kids don't necessarily know who they should be looking at as icons as to who they have become. So whether you point to a Jay-Z or even a Soulja Boy, Soulja Boy's flavor is all about black soul. That's what, to me, black music is all about. Black music celebration is what Gamble and Huff came up with to kind of connect the dots between all the generations, because it's not hard to lose, you know, as my mother would have done or seen me do a dance back in the 80s or whatever and said, oh, that's the so-and-so. We did that in the 50s. Whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to hear about Little Richard, Jackie Wilson, whatever, when I'm a teenager. But as I get older, it begins to make, if I'm being this business, especially, it makes a lot. You got to know this shit, you know, and even if you're not, it's still a part of who we are. You know, and our music is about, it is our communication. It is our CNN lifeline. It's our statements of rebellion. It's our place of joy. It's our place of sorrow. Like you said, a certain song, come on, man. I was with Professor Griff one day, and he got to talking about old love songs or whatever. We were recording the interview, and he said, hey, man, I ain't trying to be funny, but look like I got you kind of mixed up. And it was a song he mentioned, and instantly, man, I was like, man, I swear this recorder wasn't going, man. I'd be saying a whole lot of shit, you know, but that's how we've communicated that way. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important for yourself and the Quincy's and the Dre's, and not to be confused with the beat makers and the one hit wonders. But again, when you 600 albums deep, you know, when you, hell, if you can go 3 albums deep of hits, it's worth looking at.
Yeah,
you
it
know,
is. It
to
is.
Be in the 600 range. You know, I told Jermaine Dupri one day, I said, man, I'm not trying to be funny, but in my eyes, you and Teddy and a few others, man, have achieved the unachievable. I can't look at you and say, this is inspiration, man, because it's so far out of range.
Yeah.
Being honest with you, so far out of range. I mean that in a compliment.
Well, thank you, man. Like I said, I'm grateful. Like I said, I am a blessed baby. You know, I could have been gone. You know, I've been in so much that could have taken my life. And I realized that God has given me and paved the way for me to stay alive. And I still don't know what for.
Now, I got to ask you a question, man. And I'm sure the fans are curious. You know, you say you kind of walked away at one point.
Yeah.
You know, what takes Teddy Riley, you know, one of the most successful producers of our lifetime, regardless of how people may, you know, like I said, when we live in it at the time, you don't really understand. And you and I have been friends for a long time. And I've told you, I said, man, it's hard for me sometimes because I forget who I'm with. And I'm not saying that you're going to sit there and go, gee, don't you? You know who the fuck I am, right? But you know, I'm serious. You know, we out at the mall and shit. We out at the Guitar Center, wherever. And I'm just saying, you know, when you're living it, you kind of forget, like, this is not, you know, the person that you're with is one of the greatest contributors to black music of our lifetime. What makes you walk away for a few years, hell, a month?
My children is, I realized I was at a point where I needed them more than anything, more than my music, and I was losing them. So I stopped, and until my daughter last year, Hip Hop Honors, I wasn't going to do the hip-hop honors. I canceled at one time. I said, I don't know. I wasn't going to do the Japan tour. I did a Japan tour by myself. And when I did that tour, I asked my daughter, I said, I got a Japan tour. And it's really not about the money because they want to pay me really well. But I just really feel like I don't want to be back in the business. And my daughter, my 20-year-old daughter said, you need to go. You need to go back in the business because we're missing your music. We're missing you as an artist. You know, people talking about you, and some are good and media is bad. You need to go out and really stand for who you are and be who you are, who you've always been, and go out and show them how it's really done. And I went to Japan, and I was there alone. Like, I had no Blackstreet. I had no guy. I had nobody. I canceled 4 times. My 4 times canceling, they gave me an offer that I couldn't refuse to be over there. It's like, people don't care if you come with Guy or Blackstreet. You are their biggest idol as a producer in Japan. So when I went over there, it took me 2 shows to really get past the nervousness, because I've never been nervous on stage. But being on stage by myself and doing what Herbie Hancock, you know, what he did back in the day, I just saw myself as that. And I said, you know what, I could really do this. And I did it. So my kids are the main ones that really, like, said, leave this shit alone. You don't need it. And it's not your turn any damn way. Get out. Music is about turn. It used to be everybody's turn, where it was like enough money, enough success in the business for everybody. Like, we have 50 groups and all of them were platinum. We have 50 rap artists and all of them were platinum. We had 100 R&B singers. All of them were platinum. Every last person that came out from 85 to 94. Matter of fact, 95. That's when it ended. And you started seeing groups disappear. You ain't see these niggas no more. You ain't gonna see them no more neither. These guys on crack. And these guys is gone. They gave it up. One guy got fat. You know what I'm saying? You don't see none of them anymore. Matter of fact, we don't even have a group. Do y'all know a group that's superstars? Right now, today? There's none. You know what I'm saying? So, it used to be that. So, now it's about turn. Like, it's your turn. You're going to be the hottest producer this year. And you're out next year. It's his turn. And then you're out next year. You're not even going to get a Grammy. It's your turn. So, it's about turns. And I feel now it's my turn to really make history and really, like, just turn the music industry around. We already know what it is on the digital side, and we know how to sell records and what it's going to take. It's a singles world right now. You get a good single, chase it, put out another single, chase that, put out another single. Then turn all of that into catalog and sell it as a package, as a present. You know what I'm saying? Put a Christmas record with it, and it's going to sell. It's different ways to market now. And we still don't get it. So now we have to now kind of revamp what we're going to do, because no one is selling records. No one out here. Only the country and the rock folks. But R&B used to sell so many records. Now it's not. And it's only like maybe 4 people. That's over 1 million. So my kids was like, chill for a minute. When I was living out here in California and I had my kids for the whole summer, they said to me, I asked them for a wish, you know, give me a wish. Your wish is my command. What do y'all want? And they were like, we want you to come home. And when that was said, I packed up everything and the bus, all my cars, put them on flatbeds, and move everything. Like, I'm about to move everything from over there now and bring it to California. Because they say they wanted me to come home, but they didn't say, you know, they wanted to live in Virginia. They were like, just get us away from mom. Wow. And that's what I did. You know, I went back to get them. And, you know, I succeeded doing that, but I couldn't take my children away from their mothers. They deserve their mothers just as well as they deserve me. It's just they want to be with me because I'm a fun cat. And I love having fun with my children. You know what I'm saying? So they told me, come home. And I went home. And we stayed in Virginia for like maybe 2 months. Because they decided, listen, Dad, we want to move somewhere else. We don't like Virginia anymore. So I said, well, let's go to Atlanta. So we went to Atlanta, and I hated Atlanta. And I only hated it because, you know, it's just so territorial there. You know, like you had to get down with a dude. And I'm just not about getting down with niggas. I'm about networking and really, like, you know, putting this thing together. I'm not going to be Andre Harrell and sign under anybody and be nobody's worker. You know what I'm saying? I work for myself, and I will continue to work for myself. And I will continue to work with people. And if they want to work with me, cool. If not, fuck them. So that's how I feel. And that's how I've been. I don't feel like being... I've been in the music industry 23, 24 years. So I should be able to have and use my own credibility to do what I do, whether it makes me a lot or a little bit of money. And it's not a pride thing with me. It's about... if you want me to do some stuff with you, why do I have to sign a contract? Why can't we just work together? And you already know that I'm a loyal cat. I've been with Gene Griffin for 20 years. So I'm loyal when it comes to anything. I can stay and stick it all out, even though he stole so much money from me. I can stick it out because I know what he's done for me, I couldn't get anywhere else. He got me in this music industry, and I learned a lot. And the stuff that I know now today, I had to pay for it. It's like college. That was my tuition. It's about $10, $20 million. And I paid. So I would do anything my children asked me to do because it's their future, not mine. What I do in this business is their future.
Man, I tell you, you know, and when you speak about, you know, and I'm only got maybe one question, and I'm going to let this get wrapped up. But when you think about, you know, like you said, you know, you were blessed and brought into this business. And there's a lot of folks, man, and I don't need to say the names. You may feel like you want to. And I'm going to say this in a positive way so no one should get offended. But a lot of producers got blessed by you to come into this business and be successful. Whether they say it or not, you know, I just want to know how you feel, you know, how what kind of pride you take in seeing, you know, like a Pharrell. Everyone knows that, you know, there's a history, you know, that you brought Pharrell in. You know, there's been other names as well that have turned out to be very successful. And I just wonder, when you see them, are you able to smile and say,
of course,
that's a great thing right there.
All day. I'm not a hater. That's not even in my blood. I like when I see that. I like when Jermaine Dupri and those guys talk and Puffy and, you know, and say things, you know, they say great things. And I'm proud, you know, when I hear that, it just makes me proud. It gives me life. Cause I think life comes from being under stress, puts more life on you. So those things and that success of theirs has given me life. Because I was just at a Puffy's party, you know, when he got the star on the Walk of Fame. And when I was there, I think more people came up to me than anybody else in that place other than Puffy. They came up to him because he was the master of ceremony. But when I was in there, they thought they saw a ghost because I don't go to parties. And everybody was like, is he really here? Like, Puff came over to me like, I don't really believe you here. Like, you know, dude had to touch my shoulder or something. Like, is this you? Like, him and Dallas Austin cornered me, you know, because I don't go anywhere. And it's like, I try to not overexpose myself so that when I do go somewhere, it makes a statement. And not just like, damn, I seen that nigga so many times. He be in every damn party. I'm not that cat. And I keep myself that way until I die. Because, you know, I know when I do die, everybody can come to my funeral because they don't never see me at a party. So, but I just try to do that so that when I do make an appearance, people are glad to see you. I was never one like the other guys in the groups. They always at every party, and I don't like to go to parties. First of all, it's just really not my type of thing. I'll hang out on the corner with my dudes and, you know, with my homies, and that's a party for me, you know, looking at the girls pass by. But going to a party, it kind of, to me, it used to just start troubles. And I get kind of like flashbacks from when I used to go to the party, the rooftop. We used to deal with a whole lot of violence. And I just stopped going to parties then. Even at great parties like Bentley's, you know, there was shootouts down there. And, you know, you open up a new club and it'd be the hottest club. And the next thing you know, shootout in that club, they close it down. So I'm just not with that. Now, if it's a classy party where, you know, it's guest list only, I'm definitely, you know, interested in going there. You know, because it's about, you know, exposure, meeting people, and, you know, it's a check sometimes, you know. And that's the only thing I enjoy. I just get flashbacks from going to parties that you have to pay for. You know, because it's always a problem in there.
Well, man, I'm going to say this is it. And I got to tell you, Teddy, you know, it's been a pleasure. You know, it's the first time I interviewed you. We've always
talked. We always did other business and things, you know.
Yeah.
Man, it's a pleasure me being here and being able to be back on the scene again. And it's not overwhelming. And at the same time, it's fun. I've had so many interviews in this time of all the times that I've done interviews. Like in this month, I did 25. So this is just a blessing again, you know, just to be acknowledged and the music being acknowledged. And, you know, I look to be doing some more grateful things and greatness. And just look forward to it. You know, I'm back.
Real talk. Real talk.
To all the ladies in the place with style and grace, allow me to lace these lyrical douches in your bushes. Who rock grooves and make moves with all the mommies. The back of the club, sipping my wet is where you find me. The back of the club, macking holes, my crew's behind me. Mad question asking, blunt passing, music lasting. But I just can't quit because one of these honeys Biggie got to creep with, sleep with, keep the ep a secret. Why not? Why blow up my spot? Cause we both got hot. Now check it, I got more Mac than Craig and in the bed. Believe me, sweetie, I got enough to feed the needy. No need to be greedy. I got mad friends with Benzes, see notes by the layers. True fucking players. Jump in the Rover and come over. Tell your friends, jump in the GF3. I got the chronic by the truth.
Real talk. Real talk. Real talk. Real talk.
ROC, we running this rap shit. Memphis Bleak, we running this rap shit. B-Mac, we running this rap shit. Freeway, we running this rap shit. Owen Sparks, we running this rap shit. Chris and Neek, we running this rap shit. Take over, the break's over, nigga. Guard MC, me, J-Hover. Hey, little soldier, you ain't ready for war. ROC too strong for y'all. It's like bringing a knife to a gunfight, pin to a test, chest in a line of fire with your thin ass vest. You bringing them boys to men, them boys pull win.
Real talk, real talk, real talk.
Yo, what's up? This is Teddy Riley, and you're listening to Real Talk.
Street of Fish, Real Talk.